appointment process. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 60, Money Transmitters Act Amendments. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. House Bill number 64, Data Center Co-location Tax Exemption. Ayes 55, noes 4, excused 1. House Bill number 40, Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector Systems. Ayes 40, noes 18, excused 1. January the 16th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 11, Insurance Holding Company System Regulatory Act. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill number 47, Confidential Student Disciplinary Hearing. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 110, Off-road vehicle gasoline tax distribution sunset. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 13, livestock revisions. Ayes 58, excused 2. House Bill number 23, juvenile parole eligibility. Ayes 42, noes 17, excused 1. House Bill number 111, tips and gratuities sales tax. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 112, tip distribution policies. Ayes 42, no 17, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 131, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 131, Discrimination, sponsored by Senator Ruffus, and Act Relating to Discrimination.
Senate File 131 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 129, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 129, Motor Vehicle Accident Serious Bodily Injury, sponsored by Senator Landon, and Act Relating to Motor Vehicles.
Senate File 129 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 118, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 118, Eminent Domain 2, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, an act relating to eminent domain.
Senate File 118 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 126, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 126, Overweight and Oversized Vehicles, sponsored by Senator Schiffer, and Act Relating to Motor Vehicles.
Senate File 126 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 130, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 130, Professional Licensing Military, sponsored by Senator Landon, and Act Relating to Professions and Occupations.
Senate File 130 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senate File 125, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 125, Public Employees Requirements Upon Rehiring 2, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to public employees.
Senate File 125 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senate File 119, first reading of Senate File.
Senate File 119, Natural Gas Service Development, sponsored by Senator Hicks, an act relating to the State Loan and Investment Board.
Senate File 119 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 121, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants, sponsored by Senator Hastert, and act relating to labor and employment.
Senate File 121 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 28, Resident Preference Provisions, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 47, School Finance Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. January the 15th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 4, Livestock Disease Reporting and Liability, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 95, High School Graduation Requirements, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 94, Public Library Endowment Challenge Program Extension, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 60, Medicaid Reform, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate File 60 that was just read in, Medicaid reform sponsored by the Joint Labor Committee, has an appropriation in it, and I ask that, pursuant to Senate rules, it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Without objection, what was the number? 60?
60.
Senate File 60 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, without objection, I would request that Senate File 58, Driver's License Suspension for Child Support Nonpayment, be re-referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Tourism, Culture, and Recreational Resources. Number 58.
Without objection, Senate File 58 will be re-referred from Committee Number 1 to Committee Number 8, Transportation.
Pardon me, number six, Mr. President.
Oh, you wanted to go to travel.
Travel, yes, that's what I... Travel...
Travel, recreation, wildlife, tourism,
culture. You know where I know. Six. Mr. President, barring objection, I would request that Senate File 114...
Just a moment. Before... just so the record's clear, without objection, Senate File 58 is referred to Committee Number 6. Travel, child support, and recreation. It's referred to Committee Number 6. Now, Senator...
Mr. President, as long as we're making a sort on this kind of herd, I've got a few more. Senate File 114, assault of health care providers. Without objection, I would request that it be re-referred to travel, tourism... culture and recreational resources. Number
what
six,
was,
Mr.
What
President.
What was the number of the file?
Senate File 114.
Without objection, Senate File 114 is now referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Child Support, Hospitals, and...
Assault.
And Recreation and Cultural Resources. So ordered.
Mr. President, without objection, I would request that Senate File 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendments, be re-referred to Committee Number 6, which goes by many names, many, many names, but it basically encompasses travel and tourism and cultural resources and all those kind of things.
Without objection, Senate File 115 will be re-referred to Committee Number 6. I'm not going through the litany. For the record and for the public, this is a matter of simply trying to balance the file loads and to get the work done in a reasonable fashion as we move through this session, all jokes aside. So there you go, Chairman Burns. You got more work. Any other... Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I knew this was going to happen when we put Johnson and Sheridan County together. And I kind of wonder what the Transportation Committee is doing with its time and why the TRW simply doesn't have any time. But that'll all work out. With respect to notifications, recall the House Labor Committee tomorrow at 8 a.m., is going to put on a presentation by an NCSL guest speakers, Melissa Hansen and Laura Tobler, for Medicaid Managed Care. That's tomorrow at 8 a.m. If you want the opportunity to hear from those folks on the Medicaid expansion, things like that, Medicaid Managed Care, that may be your only opportunity. And in the afternoon tomorrow on adjournment, they've brought in a presenter from a National Association of Insurance Commissioners, Brian Webb, to talk about health insurance exchanges. Once again, that'll be really your best opportunity to learn about those. With respect to when the bills come for Medicaid expansion, they'll have hearings on this side. We haven't fully decided whether it'll be evening hearings or whether mornings. That'll be at the call of the chairman. But we want to make sure that each of you is able to get the information on that, regardless of how the debate or outcome occurs. So we'll keep you advised of those things. So there's opportunity for two education opportunities tomorrow. Mr. President, with that, I move that the Senate adjourn itself, resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate is now we'll move to consideration of bills on general file. Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, where's the gavel presented to you by the minority party that I could use?
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The
First bill for our consideration is Senate File 7. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 7, Conservation District Special Expertise, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, and Act relating to conservation districts. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard a reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move Senate File do pass. I'd like to have the Standing Committee Amendment read in.
Senate File 7, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. That substitute Number 1 for Senate File 7 do pass.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Geis.
We'll need to vote on, this is a substitute bill. We'll need to vote on it, and then I'll yield the floor to Senator Hicks to explain the amendment.
What we need to do is I take a vote on okay, we have a standing committee amendment for substitute bill number 1 for Senate File 7. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of substitute number 1 for Senate File 7 on the standing committee amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We're on the substitute bill. Senator Hicks.
Bring your recollection back to a bill that we had here last year was to give the county commissioners special expertise in dealing with the federal government when it comes to land management processes, primarily Forest Service and BLM, under the National Environmental Policy Act, also the National Forest Management Act, and also FLTMA, which is a federal land management act. Basically, the impetus at that time is we're increasingly seeing more rules and regulations come down that have a dramatic effect on the counties. We're also seeing that on the natural resource side. We passed that out last year, giving the counties special expertise to be able to deal with the federal government. Keep in mind, these are your first-line elected representatives. This year, we bring before you basically the same bill model off of last year's, allowing conservation district supervisors and granting them that special expertise under their existing statutes. And let me tell you why this is important. Because when the counties or the conservation districts, and the conservation, there's 32 different conservation districts in Wyoming, they're locally elected officials, go through the general election, they're a recognized subdivision of state government. But this is why this is important. When you file for cooperating agency status under the National Environmental Policy Act, you can be granted cooperating agency status under one or two provisions. One is you have jurisdiction by law, indicating that you may issue a permit, like a Clean Water Act permit or DEQ as an NPDES permit, gives them standing to be a cooperating agency in that component. The other is special expertise. And let me talk to the issue of special expertise and why it is important to have both your counties and your conservation district supervisors at the table. Because once the federal government grants you as an entity, a county commission, that special expertise, it's special expertise only enumerated in your state statutes. Well, in the case of counties where they deal with roads, public safety, zoning, and those type of things, the county commissioners can petition for cooperating agency status to deal in that federal nexus, dealing with those issues that are only specific to what their statutory authority is. Well, so many of these federal land use plans or these NEPA actions that come out deal with natural resources. In fact, the bulk of them, if you're familiar with an environmental impact statement, the biggest chunk of that deals not with the socioeconomics typically, it deals with the physical environment out there. The water, the soil, the air, the vegetation, and the wildlife. That's under the affected environment section, and that tends to be the big section. And this is the important component that I want to lay. This is why you need those locally elected supervisors from the conservation district, because if we go to Chapter 11, Section 16, that governs the roles and responsibility and the statutory authority of conservation districts, it enumerates that they can deal with range, water, soil, vegetation, and all these things. So what you've effectively built is not only can we deal with the economic taxation through the county commissioners, the safety issues, the zoning, the roads, now we have a locally elected body that's out there on the landscape that's mostly affected with those resource issues that can sit at the table with the federal government. With that as a general description, let's just walk through what the bill does. It adds a new section under Section 11, 16-135, and this is modeled after what we did for county commissioners last year. And it says special expertise of supervisors of conservation district. Line 4 through 10 is the exact same language for the most part that we put in for the county commissioners. The second part of that statute just pulls out what conservation districts are already statutorily obligated and authorized to be able to work in. And I'm just going to run through those. It's to stabilize agriculture and industry, protect the natural resources, including but not limited to data and information, the conservation of soil and water resources, control and prevention of soil erosion, flood prevention, or the conservation, development, utilization, disposal of water within the districts. That pretty much comes out of existing statutes and marries it up with that special expertise component. If you flip over to page 3, the second component of dealing with the federal nexus is the cooperating agency standpoint deals with developing these land use plans or these environmental impact statements. The second part of that is once that plan has actually been a recorded decision or wrote, the second part of that is actually the implementation. And under the National Environmental Policy Act, there is a provision that says the federal government has to evaluate any local land use plans and at least identify where their plan is different than those of the local government, which could be the counties or the conservation districts. A lot of times what you see is the conservation district plans mirror the counties. I can tell you one of the ones in Carbon County that we had, basically that county land use plan referenced back the conservation district supervisors on the natural resource issues. But what this effectively allows the local governments to do is represent their constituents on these natural resource issues that deal with things like soil, water, range, timber, agriculture, that whole arena of issues out there that are brought into this federal nexus. So now not only can they sit through the process in developing the plan, now through the coordination component of this that we bring in Section 8, where it says cooperate, that's the cooperate on the implementation of those plans. And it goes through and it just enumerates a little more what's there representing conservation districts as cooperating agencies with special expertise, and that's the language used in the National Environmental Policy Act, to be able to allow those local governments to be able to participate in those actions. Now, if we go down to the next section, 9, it just includes some additional language in there, not only develop, but also implement those local plans and resource management plans. Flip over to the next page, just brings in a little more language in there, down on line 9 on page 4. In developing plans under this paragraph, the supervisor of the district shall consider the customs, culture, residents of the district, and those customs and cultures related to land and resource uses. Another provision, and if we go down and we get to line 16, the supervisors of the conservation district can adopt, through a public process as outlined in state statutes, a resource management plan. And that becomes the basis for dealing with the federal government. And then an effective date. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 7, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Senate File 7 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18.
Senate File 18, Professional Engineers and Surveys Practice Act. sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to surveyors and engineers. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Case.
You know, Mr.
Senate File 18, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Wyoming Board of Registration for Professional Engineers and Professional Land Surveyors supports Senate File 18, as well as the State Engineer, and the Senate File modifies our current Practice Act. Our last statutes on this were passed in 1987 and are very much out of date. The bill passed the Senate in 2011 as well as 2012. In 2011, it bogged down in the House because of an LSO review. 2012, the vote in the Senate was 28-aye, 2-no, but it ran out of time for consideration in the committee it was assigned to in the House. Now, I know you're going to all remember this because it's going to stick around until we finally pass it. So the specifics are, first of all, it removes discipline-specific engineering licensure. Wyoming is one of the handful of states that still license by discipline. Civil engineer, mechanical engineer, electrical engineer, architectural engineer. That is, the specialty in which an applicant passed the PE exam is placed on their seal. Since professional engineers are already allowed to practice in any area that they have competence, emphasis on competence, via education and experience, having discipline-specific licensure doesn't make much sense. There are very few states that still have that. We're simplifying the education requirement for surveying licensure. The requirements will be graduate from a surveying curriculum approved by the board of at least 2 years, and have at least 30 semester credit hours in surveying approved by the board. These hours may be part of the curriculum in the bullet above or in addition to that curriculum. The bill also removes any reference to specific map sizes. These standard sizes will be moved to board rules, which will allow the board more flexibility when common map sizes change, which they do. Changes the board from 7 members to 9 members, of which one would be an additional land surveyor. This is necessary in order to have larger subcommittees for reviews of applications, complaints, etc., and to protect against insufficiency for a quorum in the event contested cases come forward. They're just not enough for the quorum. In such an event, board members involved in such cases cannot rule in any part of any appeal. So 2 additional board members ensure fair and uninvolved members hear such an appeal. Because the board is self-funding and because the number of licensees is growing, the board anticipates no increase in cost at this time from either the state or the registrants to support the additional members. In general, this change helps the board better positioned to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the Wyoming public. Throughout the bill, they've changed references from registrant or registration to licensee and licenses. Such a change reflects the national trend where these professions are truly seen as licensed in a more formal sense than just recorded or followed as registration suggests. We have two new pathways for licensure for groups with special qualifications, in particular for candidates who have earned a doctoral degree in engineering will be issued a professional license if they have 4 years of engineering experience and increased responsibility and scope of a grade and character that evidence the applicant is competent to practice as a professional engineer and have passed any examinations required by rule of the board to establish competence at a professional level in Wyoming licensing laws and professional ethics. For applicants who hold a license issued by another jurisdiction to practice professional engineering or professional land surveying and who have held that license for 15 years immediately prior to submitting the application, they may be issued a professional license if they've not been disciplined in any jurisdiction and have passed an examination required by rule of the board to establish competence at a professional level. These new pathways allow Wyoming to evolve with the times. The board seeks the ability to at least review and license, if applicable, candidates from other countries and candidates from other states. They'll have significant appropriate domestic experience, and oftentimes Wyoming has to turn down candidates of that quality either from the next state or another country because our statutes just don't allow it, and they sure would like to be able to license them. Employees of the state of Wyoming performing regulatory reviews within the scope of their authority and employment would be exempt from licensure under the proposed bill. We removed references to bachelor's degrees being ABET EAC accredited because someday they may change their name, and the degree requirements will be those approved by the board, and other educational pathways also exist for applicants to meet the technical rigor as the original degrees. For an example that I hear, a candidate might have a BS degree in geology and a master's degree in environmental engineering. The candidate's combination of education probably would be acceptable to the board. Our current statutes limit that type of flexibility. It also allows the board to impose civil penalties of up to $2,000 per violation and criminal penalties of up to $1,000 per violation on anyone who violates the act. There are several issues that are not affected. Exemptions for industrial employees who are doing work for their employers still exist as long as the workers are not preparing submittals for the public record. This exemption is current law and is maintained in the proposed bill. Employees of companies regulated by the Public Service Commission are exempt while performing within the scope and authority of their employment. This exemption is also current law. The exemption is for the need of a Wyoming-specific surveying examination. If somebody takes the national examination in Wyoming, it's good everywhere. If somebody takes it in another state, it's good here. And the location of the board, which is currently under the umbrella of the state engineer's office, is still there. That finishes my explanation, Mr. Chairman. I stand ready for questions and would ask for everybody's eye.
Okay, Senator Johnson, did you want to take care of the amendment?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Not at this
time. I'll ask Senator Scott to do that.
Any discussion on the bill? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let's take care of the amendment.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the amendment was moved by the chairman of the committee. Amendment does a couple of things, and I'll get into the bill a little and explain the amendment. First thing it does is the board can modify the requirements section relate to licensure of faculty members, University of Wyoming. The board is trying to get the faculty members in the upper division, University of Wyoming, to teach engineering, licensed as engineers. Makes all kinds of sense. There is a provision in the bill on page 4 where if they're teaching in an upper division course as a professional engineer, in other words, they're holding themselves out to be a professional engineer, they have to be. Now, that's in parallel with all the other provisions in the bill. Doesn't interfere with the university's authority to get anybody that they think is competent to teach the course. It's what this does, in the standing committee amendment, is get at what the board really wants to do, which is let them modify their requirements a bit so the people that have the academic expertise and have come by it that way can get themselves licensed easily, allows them to negotiate with the university on that and modify their rules accordingly. I think it's a very sound provision. On page 27, that's the provision, the reference there, where the officer employees say to Wyoming, who reviews within the scope of his authority, doesn't have to be a licensed professional engineer, except that if he holds himself, or a land surveyor, except if he holds himself out as such, then he has to be licensed. And if he files a water right with the state engineer's office, he has to be licensed. And that, I think, will mean that this won't have any significant budgetary implication for other agencies. Failure to include this exemption would have a significant budgetary application. The rest is renumbering and relating to the title. Mr. Chairman, that's a brief explanation of the committee amendment. I urge adoption of the committee amendment. Be happy to answer any questions on it.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in that second paragraph there, too little I, I'm just curious as to does this actually mean that somewhere in this statute means that if you apply for a water right, you have to involve a state engineer, I mean a licensed engineer some way, shape, or form? If you just want to go out and get a stock well or anything else, want to double check that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, as a general rule, if you're applying for a large water right, yes, and it's in Title 41, I believe, there are specific requirements for things that have to be done by an engineer or land surveyor, and those aren't affected by this. That law has been there since the year one. I can tell you about it because I've paid those fees. There are specific exemptions. If you're applying for a domestic or a stock well of 25 gallons or less, those don't apply. And so that the ordinary house well or stock well that people get, you don't have to have an engineer. But if you're going to have an irrigation right, yes, you do. And that's existing law, and this doesn't affect that. This is just making sure that we don't affect that in this amendment. Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 18, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question.
Question being called on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 18, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 18 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 51.
Senate File 51, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance, sponsored by Senator Case. sponsored by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to commercial driver's licenses. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with a due pass on Senate File 51, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act compliance. And there is no amendments to explain this bill. I'll call upon myself. Everyone in the Senate has seen this. I was looking around the room. You've either seen it here, or if you were in the other body, you saw it down there in the last couple of years. Every time the federal government updates or authorizes more appropriation money for highways, which they just did in the last year or so, they also come out with changes to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act. So that's all this does, is bring us up in compliance or update our own statutes concerning this. And if you go down through the bill, it'll start out by changing 7-19-106, access to and dissemination of information. This is for third-party testers that now they're required to have a criminal history background check. And through rule and reg, the department will define what would not allow them to be a tester. Third-party for commercial driver's licenses, by the way. This does not have to do anything with your driving your car or pickup. The next paragraph, V1, Romanet, it's strictly the Department of Transportation dealer and wholesale licensing and permitting under the Title 31 for purposes of performing background checks. This gives them permission. Once again, for CDL examiners and third party, those given permission to do their own examination. You go down to page 3 and XV little 3Is, employees, prospective employees, and volunteers of the Wyoming Department of Transportation are necessary to perform background checks required by. This gives the department the permission to do it. And then the next new language right below that, line 10 of page 3, is persons conducting skill testing under this statute. And as used in this act, once again, we change some verbiage to match the standards of other states and the federal government. So it starts out on line 17, inserting commercial vehicle or commercial motor vehicle means. And this is just compliance, so all 50 states should be using the same language. And new language like vehicle combination used in commerce is part of the definition for all states. And then little a on line 23 has a gross vehicle combination weight rating or gross combination weight of 26,001 pounds to be a commercial license. You can actually buy a 26,000 or less and not need a CDL to drive that. And the reason that it's put in there as the combination weight rating or gross combination weight, whichever is greatest, is because people were buying vehicles with a tag on them, a plate on them that would say that the rating was 25,999 or 26 even or less, but actually loading it up and the suspension underneath would be beefy enough to take the additional, and they'd go down the road and say, but the plate says I'm only gross weight, I'm only allowed 26, so I don't need a CDL. Now, if you weigh out at over 26, you will need a CDL. And this includes the towed units or units with a gross vehicle weight rating or gross vehicle weight. That's on page 4, the first couple, 3 lines. Once again, stressing that if you weigh out at over 26, you better have a CDL to be driving it. And I will stress, and it comes up in a couple questions from the committee, that there are a lot of agricultural exemptions to this, so you have to take them into consideration as far as whether you need a CDL license or not, and you should see your local highway patrolman to discuss that. The rest of it is transportation of hazardous materials. Once again, that's line 9, page 4. That's just conforming to how the federal government does it. And line 3 says, as defined in Wyoming Statute 317-102, little a, et cetera, once again, all conforming. And then line 15 of page 4 has a gross vehicle weight rating or gross vehicle weight of 26,001 pounds or more, whichever is greater. Once again, that's in CDL requirement in the hazardous carrying area. So if your vehicle weighs over 26, you will need a CDL license to be driving it. Then they get into line 19, licensed driver's license, commercial driver's license, instruction permit, commercial learner's permit. We used to call it a commercial driving permit. So then we had to change everywhere through the rest of this bill to commercial learner's permit, a CLP versus a CDP. And so that is conforming there. Tank vehicle definition, page 5, line 4, they changed a little bit of that. And the new language says that it has a, once again, this is where the ag exemption comes in. So if you're hauling water, stock tanks, you aren't caught by this section right here. Basically, if you have over 119 gallons in a container, you will need a CDL. You're considered a tank truck or a tanker. And an aggregate rated capacity. So any individual container over 119 gallons or more, or an aggregated rate capacity of 1,000 gallons or more, which are either permanently or temporarily attached to the vehicle or chassis, a commercial motor vehicle transporting an empty storage container tank. And that was, of course, the question in committee, how do you define empty? Once again, you'll have that discussion with your highway patrolman. It should be empty as to what it really does carry normally and or something you can't probably drain, but that's up to your highway patrolman. And then they do about a temporary, with a tank, if its rated capacity is 1,000 gallons or more, but is temporarily attached to a flatbed trailer, it is not considered a tank vehicle. So if you're transporting an empty tank with 1,000 gallons or more capacity, but definitely is not permanently or could not be permanently fixed to that type of trailer, you are not considered a tank trailer. Once again, on line 21, we had to put in commercial learner's permit versus commercial driver's permit, and a definition according to the federal government we conform to, and all 50 states should agree to it. And then, once again, on page 6, line 12, we just strike out driver instruction and go to license a commercial learner's permit. And then we had to institute, and who on line 20, page 6, any person who holds valid Wyoming classified driver's license and who is at least 18 years of age. We did not have an age requirement in there. You do now that it's 18. May apply to division for a commercial learner's permit. Had to put that language in there. The next page on 7, line 2, is learners, strike driver instruction, put learner's permit. And then here's the change where we went to 180 days that your learner's permit is good for, and you could apply once for to reissue it for another 180 days. Should you not complete it after that second time you up it for 180 days, you have to start over again and go through the written and the instruction. So from a 2-year, I believe it was a 2 years that you had within 2 years to get your license, now you have 180, plus you could add 180 days to that, 360 days, basically a year to get your license. Line 22 of page 7, once again, learner's permit was struck in line 24, just conforming language, so we're all talking. That goes down through, talks about proof of identity established by certificate. All for learner's permit, it's all language that exists today through page 8. I did ask them how they would prove that you'd only upped your learner's permit once, so you got a total of 300. They would say, oh, you're running out of your second one. You have to go back through the instructions again. Bottom page 8, strike out driver instruction and put learners in there. Page 9, lines 2 through 7, a commercial driver's license issued after commercial learner's permit shall be subject to the time restrictions stated in Wyoming Statute 317304, little g, and that is it's shown later in the bill, it's 14 days. So you cannot go right from getting a learner's permit and walk right back in and get your CDL. You have 14 days. It does require a two-hour skills test once you do go back in for the actual test itself. Once again, struck driver instruction and put learners in there. And on 19, page 9, or commercial learner's permit, put in there to conform the language through the whole bill. And then on page 10, line 18 through 24, it talks about a third-party test who is not a division of the state is bonded in amount. And the reason they wanted bonding for third-party testers was if somebody did something illegal or paperwork or paid somebody to obtain that CDL license, that this bonding would cover the retesting cost and the new instruction cost of getting that person a CDL license. So if they find some kind of fraudulent act happening by the third-party tester, the bonding would go towards retesting the people that could have been affected by it. And it talks about on 22 about fingerprints and other necessary information for background checks. Line 4 of page 11 talks about no skills test is conducted on a student or graduate of commercial vehicle training school by any commercial vehicle training school examiner who provided the instruction to the student or graduate. So you have to have a third person, third party involved. So if I train you on for your CDL, I have to have another party actually give you the test. And then line 9, page 11, also talks about that they have to give at least 10 skill tests a year. The department told me this is already in effect in their rules and regulations. If a third-party tester does not give that many tests within a year, they have to go back to a recertification process. They told us that's what's in place at the moment. They just had to write it in statute, not just rules and regulations. Page 12, line 1 through 4, any permit issued in connection with a commercial learner's permit shall be issued on a separate document. Today we put it on one document showing your license and that you have a learner's permit. They are now going to have to use two documents. They would issue a second document anyway once you did get your CDL. It is just a paper shuffle. In their mind, it's not costing them any more money in the long run, so there is no fiscal note to this bill. And once again, we put our commercial learner's permit under 317.123, authority of the Division to cancel licenses. We had to put a conforming language commercial learner's permit in there. And you go down to page 13, talks about the commercial driver's license or commercial learner's conforming language in which they can revoke a license should you be fraudulent about your application. 317.304, issuance, classification, endorsements. Before applying for a commercial driver's license, an applicant shall have a commercial learner's permit for at least 14 days. That was what I said from above, that you cannot just walk in, apply for a learner's permit, turn around and say, I'm ready to take tests. There's a 14-day period in there which you're supposed to then take the written and the instruction if need be. And 317.305 is disqualification and cancellations. If you made any false applications, convicted, lied for your application for your CDL, this is what they can do. You can be disqualified from operating a commercial motor vehicle for a period of 60 days, as long as it's not serious enough violation to actually pull your license. And line 4, page 14, talks about the department receiving credible information about somebody that did fraudulently apply for a license or received a license under fraudulent manner, that the state shall notify that person, give them 30 days to answer. Should they not answer, then their license is revoked if they do answer. And it's not that serious a violation as in they didn't dot the right I or cross the correct T. They can then once again retake their test or reapply to the department. And this act is effective January 1 of 2014. And the reason for that is they want to be able to spend the year getting everybody educated, getting the criminal background checks done on the individual third-party testers, and everybody will have to comply by January 1 of 2014. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think I've covered this very exciting bill.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just
just a question to be sure I understand. On the bottom of page 3, line 22, we've changed the definitions on the 26,000 or greater, and then it goes on to talk about inclusive of a unit with a 10,000-pound rating. And I want to be sure that with this definition change, does it, A, affect a 10,000, which would be a one-ton pickup? Pretty sure it doesn't. But what about a one-ton pickup that's hauling something that the combination is 26,000 pounds? And does that, in fact, mean that now they'll have to have a commercial driver's license to do that? That would be like a one-ton pickup hauling a backhoe. I think I just need some clarification.
Further discussion? Senator Von Flatter.
From my understanding of this, Mr. Chairman, and to the good senator from Riverton, which I really did expect a question or two from you, yes, if you gross out at over 26,000, how I read this, you would have to have a CDL to be as a combination weight. And I can get a definite ruling on that for you tomorrow, but the way I read it, yes. Except for the ag exemption that I mentioned earlier.
Senator Meyer.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. I wanted to make sure that ag exemption was in there.
Further discussion? Senator Esquivel.
Now, Mr. Chairman, and I just want to add something in regard to the bottom page 10, and my committee chairman may want to comment on it, but in regard to these third-party testers, apparently, in some parts of the country, you know, this is a big business, and, you know, their qualifications are suspect to some extent, but apparently it's big business in some parts of the country, and I think that's probably the reason they have the fingerprints and the background information on third-party testers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Von Flannery's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 51, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 51 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate Appropriations Committee, we're going to go down to the JAC and continue on our hearings. We're supposed to start at 3 o'clock.
Next file, okay. Next file for our consideration is Senate File 67. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 67, Wiretap Authorization, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 67, Wiretap Authorization. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 67, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 22.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 67. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll take care of the Standing Committee Amendment as I go through the bill and explain what it does. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, this expands the area for wiretaps in the state of Wyoming. A little bit of history on it or how it actually works. Prior to this bill, basically the only crimes you could do wiretaps for were drug offenses. We are expanding, at the request of the executive branch, expanding the areas that the specific crimes in which you may use a wiretap. And I'll go through those. This expands that authority, and I'll go through the various ways they do this. The other thing to remember, actually the state of Wyoming, when we do a wiretap, when the state does a wiretap, they piggyback on the federal system. We're using federal hardware by and large, and the locations for the wiretaps actually are in Casper and Cheyenne at a federal wiretap site, which if you found that out, they'd probably have to kill you. I don't know what happens. Starting on page one, we start in with authorization for interception of wire, oral, or electronic communications. And what this does, the Attorney General, when a district attorney or the Attorney General within the jurisdiction where they want to do the wiretap, the Attorney General can authorize an application to a judge of competent jurisdiction for an order for a wiretap, oral or electronic communications by the Department of Criminal Investigation, Federal Criminal Law Enforcement Agency, or any law enforcement agency having responsibility for the investigation of the offenses for which the application is made. And here we go into what the offenses are. And this is going to be a list of offenses that are being added that are eligible for a wiretap. On line 14, page 2, murder. Let's see. On line 17, kidnapping or related felony offenses. On line 20, first or second degree sexual assault. And that's Wyoming Statute 62302, 62303. And then it goes on and says, or any of the offenses specified in, and I'm going to list them, and this is the Standing Committee report, the Standing Committee amendment. Wyoming Statute 62314, which is first-degree sexual assault. Wyoming 62315, which is second-degree sexual assault. Wyoming 62318, which is solicitation of a minor. And Wyoming 64303, and that's sexual exploitation of a minor. Now, the one, what the Standing Committee Amendment does is remove 62316 and 62317. And those are the respectively third and fourth degree sexual abuse of a minor. Those are the lower offenses. We said they did not merit moving up to the use of a wiretap or electronic communication. Going on down, and that's the Standing Committee Amendment. On line 24, robbery is included. On the top of page 3, line 2, blackmail is included. Line 4 on page 3, escape as defined in 65206 and 65207. That's felony escape. If you're charged with a felony, it also covers if you're charged with a misdemeanor and you escape, that automatically moves into the felony area. In other words, that escape is a felony, even if you're in jail for a misdemeanor. So that would be covered. It covers any escape for all practical purposes, what it does. You can use a wiretap. Okay, moving on page 3. And this is procedure for interception of wire, oral, or electronic communications. What this does, and it's down on line 13, which interception shall be within the territorial jurisdiction of the court in which the judge is sitting. Now, what happens is, I'll give you an example. We may do a wiretap, and I'm going to give you two examples, one in-state, a wiretap up in Johnson County. The actual place where the wiretap is taking place can be in Casper, or it can be in Cheyenne. And what it says is the judge has to okay it where the electronic interception is taking place. So it could happen with a judge in Natrona County, or a judge in China, depending where the actual wiretap takes place, it does not necessarily have to be with a judge in Judicial District 4. Second example. If, for example, we have an investigation into a kidnapping or any of the listed crimes, and the bad guys have fled to Colorado, and the DCI or the law enforcement people say we need a wiretap on those bad guys in Colorado, probably the wiretap itself would be in Cheyenne. That's where the judge signs the order. So it's that ability to reach out and follow whatever leads there are. And by the way, Mr. Chairman, that system's been in place for under the Wyoming Illegal Drugs Act for a number of years. But understand, this expands that procedure to those listed crimes. Going down on the bottom of page 3, the application for an order for a pen register or trap and trace device. Mr. Chairman, as I'm sure you're well aware, a pen order records the numbers that a phone dials out. A trap and trace records the phone numbers that are coming into a phone. It's a tool that they use. For example, again, I'll go back to the kidnapping. If they've got bosses somewhere else and the boss calls them, they want to know what that number is, or they want to know who the kidnapper calls, trying to move up the food chain in the crime that's being investigated. Again, it expands the ability to use those, the pen register or the trap and trace device under the crimes, the expanded list of crimes that are listed. offenses listed in 73705A. Again, over, we have to, the issuance of an order for a pen register or a trap and trace device over on the bottom of page 4. Again, it can be used for those crimes. On page 5, line 8, the repealer is the old list of crimes that we repeal all those because we made a new list of crimes that are eligible for electronic interception. The ones that dropped off, we dropped off burglary and felony larceny. We felt those did not rise to the level of using an electronic intercept. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. I would like first, before we get into the bill itself, I would like to work the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 67. You will recall that is specifying in the sexual assault statutes which ones qualify and which ones don't. And then I'm going to ask for a vote on the Standing Committee Amendment, and then we'll deal with the bill as a whole.
Any further discussion on the bill? On the amendment.
On the Standing Committee Amendment.
On the Standing Committee Amendment. Question. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the committee or motion that when the committee will rises to report, do so with a favorable recommendation on the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 67. Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying one. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 67 has passed to Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question.
Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 67, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Senate File 67 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 74. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 74, Professional Licensing Military Spouses, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to professions and occupations. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a due pass on Senate File 74, Professional Licensing Military Spouses. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment. I ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 74, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Number 1 amendment to Senate File 74, and to explain this bill and the amendment, I ask that you recognize the good senator in front of me from Laramie County.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I bring to you Senate File Number 74, Professional Licensing Military Spouses. And you might say that this bill piggybacks on Senate File 18, Professional Engineers and Surveyors, which was explained to you by my good senator from Senate District 6, because it has to do with licensing and professions. So this is brought to us by Military Affairs, and it's a way to help our military neighbors and to basically get on board. You heard from the good senator from Senate District 6 talk about why Senate File 18 was important in terms of having to turn down some very qualified people because of a lack in some of our professional licensing statutes. Well, this bill, Senate File 74, faces the same problems, and it's a way to resolve those problems to help license military spouses that come in, either move, the transfer to this base, and they have a professional license in another state. This way, should this pass, those military spouses, as long as they're a military spouse of an active military, they can. This bill would allow for that military spouse to be licensed, to receive a temporary license in that particular occupation that he or she might be in for up to 120 days, as long as they're active in their prior jurisdiction from where they came from, and they have a good background, or at least there's nothing in their background to that would have disqualified them in their original state. So as long as they fit all those qualifications, this bill would allow those individuals to apply for licensing and be able to get a temporary permit and go to work soon thereafter. So it's really a great benefit for those military spouses that have a license of some sort or some profession. And on your bill, if you look at the fiscal note, there's different professional licensing boards that were considered in looking at this bill, everything from architects, dental examiners, physical therapy, veterinary medicine, cosmetology, board of pharmacy, occupational therapy, and some of these boards would be some of these professions. People in these professions would be able to get a temporary license for up to 120 days by being a military spouse. And that's, as stated previously, the military spouse has to be in good standing. That's Rule 3 on page 2. It talks about being a military spouse to an active military service member, and in terms of what constitutes a military service member, it covers it's fairly broad, and that's to ensure that we don't leave anybody out. The as states on page 3, as long as the individual holds a relevant, this is on small I, holds a relevant active occupational professional license in good standing from another state, which state mandates a substantially equivalent or more stringent educational training, examination, experience requirements for licensure, they would be able to get licensed by the state of Wyoming and begin relevant work in their profession. And this helps the family. It helps our consumers. It's a big help for everybody. I will refer to the Standing Committee amendment because there are some exemptions in this bill. And this is at the bottom of page 4. Where it states that this section shall apply to all applications for licensure under Wyoming statutes, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what the amendment addresses that particular section because physicians and attorneys, I believe, were exempt, excluded from this licensing provision. The amendment deletes the Chapter 26 physicians and surgeons and instead inserts applications to any board which represents a profession with prescriptive drug authority. And there was a concern in the committee about granting automatic licensure. Well, I shouldn't say automatic, but speeding up the process for automatic licensure for those individuals that have access to prescriptive drugs. There was a concern about that part, as I recall the testimony. I believe that plan basically explains the bill and the amendment. So at this point, I guess I would ask for your vote on the amendment, and then we'll get to the bill after your vote, and I would hope you would vote what I.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Question on the amendment. All those in favor of adopting Amendment Number 1 to Senate, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 74, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. Back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill?
Question on the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the committee, what happens if this military spouse suddenly becomes unspoused?
Senator Esquivel.
Well, I can look into that, Mr. Chairman. I can look into that question for you, and I think we did cover it. I don't recall the answer, but I would imagine if the person becomes an ex-spouse, it all depends on when the person becomes an ex-spouse. I would imagine that if a person, a military spouse, and a military active person moves into this state, well, let's say the first part of January, and both procedures are begun at the same time, I would imagine that the military spouse had probably gotten their temporary permit before the divorce would be final. But that'd probably be a fact pattern. I don't know if some of my committee members might have a better answer than.
Any further discussion? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I believe the bill covers that to the senator from Cheyenne. If you look at the top of page 3, the definition of military spouse means a spouse of a military service member. And if you go to the previous paragraph, military service member is defined as an active uniform member of the United States Army, et cetera, et cetera. The moment that the military spouse becomes not a military spouse, it falls outside the definition. So, I think that's covered, And I agree with the other senator from Laramie County. I think by that point, this would have been a moot point because the military spouse would have probably already seen, or taken care of this prior to that. The moment that spouse is not a spouse anymore, it's not relevant to the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still have a question concerning the fact that how is this different than someone coming into the state married to someone and they want to find employment? I'm concerned about, and as I read it, I don't think I have a lot of worry. They have to go through and meet all the requirements of reciprocity, et cetera, for other boards in other states. That's why I question the actual need for the bill, because this can be done, military or not, of the spouse coming in, wants to be a technician, wants to be a pharmacist, et cetera, et cetera. How is it different just because it's military?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and understand, I'm going to refer you to page 3. The difference here is that you'll find a couple things they do. They put in place an accelerated procedure. And what they're saying is, we're going to accept, and I believe you'll find the words on page 3, starting in it's subparagraph 1 on line 13. Relevant occupational professional license in good standing, which mandates substantially equivalent. Now, that's a little looser standard, but we're asking them, look at it, define what's substantially equivalent in your rules, if that's what you want to do. But that opens the door a little bit wider. It doesn't throw it wide open to the bad apples, but we're saying when those families move in here, we welcome them into Wyoming. Bring your spouse with you when you're coming to Wyoming. It goes on, substantial equivalent, or more stringent. If it's more stringent, we don't have much worry. It goes on over on the top of the next page, I'm on the top of page 4. May include consideration of continuing education credits, work experience, and so forth, to determine the competency. We're opening the door a little bit there. We're asking them, and we want them to define it in rule, but it is to make those people feel welcome that they're coming in. They do have to be a good actor, and they have to complete the procedure, whatever it is in rule, that specific board specifies, and they got to pay the fees. We're not giving them a free ride, but we're opening the door a little bit for those spouses. We want to encourage them to move their family to Wyoming when that military person gets reassigned.
Mr. Chairman, in some occupations, in some professions, I think it's required that they have malpractice and liability insurance. And I'm not sure if this is mandatory or whether it's something they decide on their own. But to practice any kind of medicine without malpractice insurance is foolish. It's not good for the person or the person that they are seeking to heal or work with. So I would have a question about if that would come up in this.
Further discussion, Senator Vaughn.
To answer the good senator from the southwest corner's question, if you look on page 5, little e there, we leave it up to the boards to write the rules and regs on this. And you're right, it's a personal choice, I'm sure, on insurance. Actually, I don't think we mandate it, but that would be their choice, like any other doctor or non-doctor. Excuse me, we exempt that part of it. But anybody else that might be practicing in a certifiable trade to have insurance or not, since we don't mandate it. I'm sure they could mandate it in their rules and regs, but to get your certification to opt to practice in Wyoming. But I think page 5, line 4, pretty well sums up all the questions that it can be written in rule and reg.
Mr. Chairman, I believe one of the examples that was given, and I probably don't have all the facts exactly as they were presented, but basically one of the examples that was given is a military officer whose wife had a master's degree in Maryland in education and had quite a bit of experience. He was transferred to Nebraska and wasn't able to qualify for a teaching license immediately because there was some lower-level course that the state required to be licensed as an educator. So because of not being able to get a license immediately, because of that one technicality, just wasn't able to go to work immediately in her profession. But with something like this, that technicality, as long as she was licensed in the previous state and substantially has the qualifications for the new state, this would be a temporary, as a state, so they could practice under a temporary permit for a period not to exceed 120 days or until a professional or occupational license for which they have applied has been either granted or denied, whichever first occurs.
When the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 74. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 78. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 78, Active Duty Medical Cost Reimbursement Program Amendments, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, and Act relating to the Military Department. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
If you're reading the bill, what's your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern? Microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass on Senate File 78, and I ask the Chair to recognize the great Senator from KC to explain this fine bill.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 78 goes into specifically when a the medical cost reimbursement for someone that's serving in the Guard that's called up for by the governor to take care of an activity within the state. If they're called up by the federal government, they're covered by workman's comp under the federal call-up. This is to take care of if they're called up by the governor, and if they don't have private insurance, how do they get paid? And that's what's known as state active duty, where I'm over on page 2, line 7, and it goes on, medical expenses paid or reasonably eligible for payment by a third party on behalf of the officer enlisted man shall not be eligible for payment or reimbursement. However, they can pay, and I'm over on line 4, the adjutant general may pay or reimburse reasonable medical expenses incurred by an officer or enlisted man as a direct consequence of state active duty. That's the bill in a nutshell. If someone gets hurt, for example, a couple years ago on taking care of that flood damage, if someone gets hurt fighting fires such as we had last summer where they've been called up by the governor. The adjutant general can make sure that they get reimbursement for those injuries incurred during a state call-up. It's a service to them. It does happen. People can get hurt doing those jobs, and this is to make sure that their medical expenses are covered. It has to be related to the call-up. It can't be, something, lingering disease that they got many years ago. It has to be tied to that call-up. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Flattern's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 78, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 78 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 2.
That's right. Senate File 2, Oil and Gas Conservation Commission Filings, sponsored by Senator Bebout. An act relating to oil and gas. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02. Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, Rothsa, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 2. There is a standing committee amendment. I will move the amendment, ask it to be read in, and then yield to Senator Bebout.
Senate File 2, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, Senate File 2, I bring that to you on behalf of the Oil and Gas Commission. And what the bill does, Mr. Chairman, is to put into statute the ongoing way that the Oil and Gas Commission does its business relative to the use of a registered professional engineering stamp. And if you'll look at the bill on page 2, you'll see that on the top of the page it says the Commission shall not require that filings with the Commission be signed or stamped by a registered professional engineer. Mr. Chairman, that is a procedure. That's how the Oil and Gas Commission operates. These filings that we're talking about, Mr. Chairman, are an APD, an application for permit to drill, sundry notices, and a sundry notice is where if you had an application for permit to drill that you were going to drill to 10,000 feet, you decided to drill to 10,500 feet, you would send in a sundry notice. Mr. Chairman, these are routinely done by engineers and other people within the industry, but they're not necessarily a registered professional engineer. And the whole purpose of this bill is to, in fact, put that into statute that for filings, you do not need to have a registered engineer stamp those filings that you have. And the other problem with it also, Mr. Chairman, is that we have electronic filings, and there is issue how do you stamp the electronic filings. But, Mr. Chairman, if you look further on page 2, line 8, the procedure now, if the Commission has a hearing and someone is in front of the Oil and Gas Commission testifying as an expert, then they shall, in fact, be a registered professional engineer. And the reason there, Mr. Chairman, is that's very technical in the hearing and it's recorded as a court-like atmosphere. They do want a registered professional engineer, but the day-to-day operations, they want it to be done by the company that's supplying and asking for these filings with their in-house staff. And, Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment, and it's been moved. I'd like to explain that real quickly and see if there's any questions on it. The Oil and Gas Commission executive came and said routinely that they have an arrangement where if, in fact, you are a professional engineer and are testifying in front of the commission at a hearing, that they require you to be registered in the state of Wyoming. And that is what the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 does. Mr. Chairman, if there's no questions, I'd like to call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment number 1.
Any questions on the amendment? Senator Schiffer.
Just for clarity, that means that if you're a professional engineer and you don't have a license in Wyoming, you could not testify before the Oil and Gas Commission? In other words, is this a fence-out amendment?
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what it does. It's what they do now. They require, and what they have is a reciprocity with other states, as I understand it, and it's a formality. They request they do that, and that's what it does. My colleague from KC is exactly right.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 2, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Hines' motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 2, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 2 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27.
Senate File 27, Limited Mining Operations, sponsored by Senator Bebout, an act relating to environmental quality. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, Rafa, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Hines. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I bring this bill to you on behalf of the Wyoming Contractors Association in an effort to try to help them in an issue they've been facing with in the last 4, 5, 6 years. And what the purpose of the bill is, and I'll explain that before I walk you through the bill, and a lot of you are very aware of the gravel operations that are conducted within the state of Wyoming. And over the years, the easy-to-get-to gravel permits, i.e. the gravels either on the surface or with 1 foot or more of overburden, have been utilized and taken. And so now the contractors are finding themselves have to remove more overburden to get to the aggregate and the gravel to be able to conduct their bids and their operations with for the highways that they build and anything else they might do. And what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is it takes, and presently we have a 10-acre exemption. You're all very familiar with the 10-acre exemption. And the purpose of the 10-acre exemption was put in place so that if a contractor was a successful bidder on a project and was going to build a road in northeastern Wyoming, and then they would go out and secure a gravel pit or where they thought the gravel was, and they would be able to apply for this 10-acre exemption to be able to get in there and get the operation going, be able to complete their contract. The difference between a 10-acre exemption, this is very important, the 10-acre exemption and a small mining permit, is that the 10-acre exemption only requires 2 permits from the Department of Environmental Quality. They require an air quality permit for the crusher spread, and then they require a water quality permit for the storm drainage permit. They do not require a land quality permit. If you have a small mining claim that's anything over 10 acres, you, in fact, have to go through the Land Quality Division within the department to secure that permit. And, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, it takes now what we had before referred to as a 10-acre exemption or the surface mining operations. And if you look at page 2 at the top, and by the way, members of the Senate, this was a bill that was worked on together with the Department of Environmental Quality, Land Quality Division, and the industry. And this is their combination of their work, and the department supports this bill. They changed it from surface mining operations to limited mining operations, LMO. And the main part of the bill is right there on page 2, line 7, where they delete 10 and increase it to 15 acres. The other thing they also do is they exclude roads used to access the mining operation. And there were several reasons they did that. Obviously, if you have to get the gravel further and further away from where you're going to utilize it in your operation, you have to have a road to get there. And when they were counting the roads in the acreage, they limited their ability to be able to extract the gravel. The other thing it allows them to do, and this was an important part of it too, is if you have some issues with people and say your gravel pit that you wanted to do happened to be in an area that's very sensitive with people living close to it, whatever, you have the ability to have a road go a mile or two or whatever made sense into an area that would not be as problematic for those around the site, but yet that amount of acreage that you would have to build a road would not be included in your 15 acres. The other thing that going on page two, Mr. Chairman, is that before we had a $1,000 per acre bond on these type of operations. That's in current statutes. And we changed that and made it $2,000. We doubled it. And then it went on up for quarries to $3,000. If you look on to page three, there's a 90-day operations commence that they have to do. And then also you can see that they can also post an additional bond of $100 per acre if the department feels like it's necessary. Then further down on page three, after 30 days, there's an abandonment of it. The operator shall notify the administrator of such fact and commence reclamation. And they have rules and regulations to do that. And then, of course, you have an option for the landowner. If the landowner does not want the department, they will notify the department of writing that they may intend to further utilize the product of the mine if he assumes the obligations of the reclamation. Mr. Chairman, lines four or pages four and five go into another part of our environmental quality statutes. That'd be the bonding section. On page four, little CI is the initial bond. And page five, little 2I, is a renewal bond. And what it put in there, again, this is what's in the current bonding. And it says, the crux of it is down on page four, line 14, it says, in no event shall the bond be less than $10,000. And under existing language we have, except for sand, gravel, and various things. And what we did is we deleted those, put in limited mining operations authorized by the bonding under 3511-401E. Or any non-coal mine. And one of the confusing things, Mr. Chairman, on line 19 where it says 10 acres or less, this is not the 10-acre exemption we're talking about in the previous part of the bill. This 10 acres is in the bonding provision, which allows you to, if you have, say you have a non-coal or a coal mine or something that's, say, 3 or 4 acres, you shall have a minimum of $10,000 bond. And, Mr. Chairman, the last part of the bill is the repealers on section 2, lines 22, 23 on page 5, and those sections are repealed because we bring them back into the bill on page 2 where we talk about the bond. And so that's why we repealed the previous language and we put that language in the bond. Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. I know there's a committee of the whole amendment. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to page 2. On lines 8 and 9, excluding roads used to access the mining operation. And I'd like to hear, before this, roads were included in the 10 acres. And, Mr. Chairman, in fact, for these mines, the real impact in wherever they're located, and understand to say that there's no gravel available close to the surface in Wyoming, I would ask the sponsors to show me any evidence of that at all. I've heard plumb foolishness in my life, but never anything quite that bad. But give or take a foot or two or 2 inches of overburden is probably excessive. But anyway, we're going to talk about roads. When you get one of these small mines, and particularly if you're the neighbor, used to be the roads were included. And the significance of that is that if there were any restrictions placed on the mine, it applied to the road going in and out. Why is that significant? Because these operators want to have those mines just as close to wherever their work site is as possible, including close to towns. And guess what? People live on those roads. And early in the morning, they got their kids out there on those very roads, ready to catch a bus or catch a ride to school or walking to school. There's one right outside of the sponsor's hometown, right there along the river. And they put a gravel pit in. Were the people mad about the gravel pit? Not in the least. But they were mad about those big haul trucks going 40 and 50 miles an hour down that road through where their kids came out of that housing development, caught the bus. That's why the roads are in here. I'm trying to figure out why these operators want it excluded, because once you exclude them, when those big haul trucks fully loaded hit that road, there's no restrictions. Could you give me a little more detail on that?
Senator Vivow.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try. If I understand correctly, the concerns from my colleague from KC. Are you suggesting that by putting this language in, we're changing the way roads are handled relative to the surface mining operations on the 10-acre exemption at this point? Because that was not the intent. What the intent was is because of the, when you calculate the acreage in the roads, that was the area, that was the reason we brought this up, as far as I knew. I did not think that by putting this language in there, we changed anything differently about the way the roads are handled in the operation of the 10-acre exemption.
Senator Schiffer.
And I think I'm okay with changing the 10-acre to the 15-acre. But when you take the roads out, that means they're not regulated by the mining permit. In other words, if someone lives along those roads, and understand, if you increase the acreage, we count the roads in, and we've always counted the roads in the permit. But they're getting an extra 5 acres. I'm okay with that, I think. But we've always kept the roads in, and the reason it's important to keep them in is then the people that live along those roads have standing to go say, wait a minute. You can operate your mining permit, but you can't do it, say the bus comes by at 7:30 in the morning. You can't start hauling till 7:45. We want our kids safely on the bus first. And you got to quit hauling at whatever it is, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because our kids get back from school at 5 o'clock. That was the beauty of having them in there. It should not make any difference to the mining companies, because they're getting an extra 5 acres. And understand, you'd be shocked at how big 5 acres is. But particularly for those roads, that was the standing for the neighbors, so they could kind of protect the peace and the quiet and the quality of life, and particularly where they have small children.
Senator Anderson.
The roads being included, I did not know they ever were a county road that was included in a mining permit. I thought it was the road to get to a public road is all that was included in those mining permits. So this might be something new, what Senator from Sussex on the powder is talking about. The other question I have is why are we exempting the quarries from that? In that one, we're including the land with the roads for the quarries, and I was thinking that the quarry and the pit would be about the same. But I need some clarification on that. I don't think those county roads or public roads are included in that mining permit.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, as far as the quarry question first, if you're referring to the bonding section and the 10 acres there where the quarry is stricken, that bonding is a different thing, but quarries are treated the same as gravel. So there's no difference, and they're all the same. About the roads, as I understand, and I'll maybe have to get some more information from the department on this particular question, but the roads they're referring to are private roads. And so if it's a private road, Then I believe that there are certain things that are different relative to schools and those kind of things, and I would think that they would have to have an agreement with the private road owner and the school. But this was not intended to create any kind of an unsafe situation for what you're talking about, and I'll be glad to check into that further. The purpose of taking the roads out was the calculation of the acreage, but if that creates another issue, then I'll have to come back with another answer on that for you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we've got a little gravel pit. It's not a commercial one, but it's about a mile off the road, county road. And a quick calculation, if the road's 50 feet wide and a mile away, that's about 6 acres. And I think maybe something that might work in this is rather exempting roads altogether, we could say something like for the purpose of calculating the acreage of a road under this act, the acreage shall be determined by a divisor of 10. And that way that reduces the roads, but it keeps the roads in the act, which has the concern for the good senator from Johnson County. So I don't know, I guess maybe mull that over, but yeah, if you take 6 acres off off a mile away, and you're only left with 4 acres of mined gravel, or even 9 with the new language, that might be very problematic. But if you use a divisor for the acreage calculation, you can reduce that acreage that's used in that total calculation, but keep in the elements that concern the good senator from Johnson County.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Just for a moment, I'd like to pursue this idea of the difference between a private and a public road. It comes from an experience we've had with Family Ranch in that there was a gravel pit opened, you know, 3 or 4 miles from the ranch, and the county road comes right by within less than 100 yards of the main headquarters. Well, there were concerns not only for the fact of dust pneumonia, it's open range, there's sheep, cattle, horses, whatnot, dust pneumonia, and then also dust in the dwelling. So through, and I realize counties are different, but this, in my home county, a road use agreement between the family and the county commission and the company was worked out where there were speed limits set in certain areas, and then magnesium chloride was applied within half mile each side of the dwellings to hold the dust down because my wife's parents are in their 80s, and so there was an issue with that. So that was just an indication where on a public road there was an agreement that was applied and I guess enforced through the county through a road use agreement. More and more gravel is being moved in that county, and that's constantly an issue on the public roads. I will not speak in regard to the private road.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I readily acknowledge it is not the public roads. They can work that out with the county, and the counties usually take very good care of it. These are private gravel roads, but when they sign on with the usually it's the surface owner, the surface owner probably doesn't live it. When he lets one of these mines in, he makes sure it's not next to his house, you know, unless he really wants to get rid of his spouse or something like that. But normally they don't. If they sold some land to families, or in the case outside of my colleague in Fremont County's hometown, down along a trailer park, it makes a tremendous difference. And those are not public roads, but the person that owns the sand or gravel often will. And the only hold, the only leverage that those people have on that mining company is that road, if it's included in the permit. Otherwise, they don't even have to be notified. They are not part of the process. They just get to live with it and all the things that my colleague from Converse County mentioned. They do literally live with it.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, question for the sponsor on this. And getting back to kind of expand this discussion a little bit, where it says excluding roads, now when we go down to Section A and Section B, would that exclude the road that wouldn't be bonded? That's a question. And then if you get into Section B, where we talk about reclamation, would the reclamation be excluded if we exclude the roads in that Romanet number 6?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That question was asked, and the department said that no, they would not be excluded in the bonding site, but I'll get a clarification of that.
Further discussion on the bill? We have a committee of the whole amendment on this bill. Senator Burns?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would ask... I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 27, and I would ask that it be read in.
Senate File 27, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 7.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, did the Vice President want to speak? Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the amendment be divided.
I'd like to, Senator Burns to present it, and then we'll divide it.
Okay.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, these gravel pits have been problematic for a number of years to a number of the landowners all around the state, especially those who don't have an interest in them. And I found it interesting that the sponsor said that DEQ was there and the operators were there, but I didn't hear anything about any landowners or landowner organizations being there. These gravel pits are loud, very loud. You're talking about crushing rock. You cannot crush rock quietly. They're dusty, especially when the wind blows up. And the good senator from KC mentioned that they're also dusty when the trucks drive by them. And also, I would point out to the body that when you look at, well, first of all, to look at the citation, we're talking here Title 35. You look up Title 35. Title 35 is public health and safety. That's what this is about, and that's the title that this is under. And I think that's something we have to keep in mind and cognizant of the entire time. That being said, when you look at onto page 2, the end of lines 1 and 2, the provisions of this article shall not apply to any of the following activities. And that's what this legislation is about. Exemptions. We're talking about gravel pits that are exempt from all the regulations regularly associated with mining. And I think that's something you also have to keep in mind. They do not have to get permits unless it's a zoned county that they're in, in which case they get them from the county commissioners. That being said, Mr. Chairman, I already moved the amendment. My amendment basically does three things. It goes on to page 2, line 7, and removes the new language, the 15 acres, and keeps it at 10 acres. Mr. Chairman, I did that in the acknowledgement that an agreement, actually, on my part, to not include the road going into where the pit would be. I believe that you do the calculation that the good chairman from Lingle mentioned, and you can use up your 10 acres just on the road going in. And if indeed the further back and the further away from people you can put these gravel pits, the better they are. So if you can put a gravel pit a mile or two away rather than closer to the road, I think that's better for all people involved because it's further away from people. So that's why I have that particular part of the amendment. Second part of the amendment goes down to lines 15 and 16. And this is where the owners of the property within 1 mile of this gravel pit would be notified so that they know this is coming. I've gotten all kinds of complaints from people in my constituency about gravel pits that they didn't know were coming. Now that my particular county happens to be zoned, now it goes before the county commissioners. People do get notice. They can appear before the county commissioners and appeal it. That's not the case in most of this. So I think there should be a notification to those property owners who are going to be within a mile of this thing, of any of these, because they are loud. And they can disturb people's lifestyles, even though they get no benefit from it. And then the third thing it does goes down onto page 3, lines 4 and 5. And if you notice at the bottom of page 2, there is $2,000 and $2,000 for reclamation. And then you go to the top of page 3, and then you say that the administrator can require an operator to post an additional $100. What's the big deal? $2,000 versus $2,100. What my amendment does is it gets rid of the $100 limit. What that actually does is limit it to another $100. Gets rid of that because you may have reclamation that may be $3,000 or $4,000 an acre, depending on what the property it is. That's up to the administrator to determine, and I don't want to put another cap of just another $100 on the administrator. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would welcome any further debate or divisions on the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the amendment be divided, and I think I've got it figured out the way I want to do it, and see if you would agree if it's okay. Lines 1 and 2 would be the first division. And then starting with line 4 and going through line 15 would be the second. And then line 16, 17, and 18 would be the third. I think that works, Mr. Chairman.
I think it does also. Go ahead. Proceed. You and me on First Amendment?
And Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to do the one that I agree with him on first. Mr. Chairman, on the third proposed division, lines 16 through 18, I'm comfortable with that. I think that actually is appropriate. If they, in fact, the department realizes and sees where there's some unusual conditions that exist and want more than $100 over the $2,000 they already have, that's fine, and that should be taken care of, because obviously you want to have plenty of money there for the reclamation. So I think that's fine, and I would ask the body to concur.
Further discussion on the third division of Standing Committee or Committee of the Whole Amendment 1. Question being called. All those in favor of the third division, which is lines 16 through 18, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That passes. Back on the amendment. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one general comment about both divisions 1 and 2 is my colleague from Sheridan talked about that they are exempt from everything. That's not true in terms of permitting. These limited mining operations would still have to get a air quality permit for their crusher spread. That stays in the law, so they have to go through air quality. They also have to go to water quality for permit for storm water discharge. They do not have to go to land quality for the land quality permit, and that's the significant difference between the 10-acre exemption, soon to be 15, I hope, and the small mining permit. Mr. Chairman, obviously, excluding the roads and going with 10 acres is better than what we have now. I just would submit to the body that the agreement worked out between the department and industry based on the needs and what they were trying to accomplish, and looking at it, the 15 acres was a number they came up with. I'll yield to the judgment of this body. One of the main reasons was these crusher spreads now are a lot bigger than they used to be, and they take up more of the site than they have in the past. But, you know, that's something they'll have to work around with if the body decides to limit to 10 acres instead of the 15, and it was submitted in testimony in the committee hearings that some of these spreads may take up to 3 or 4 or 5 acres. And I guess what they could do, if we want to send them, then move the spread and then set up and mine where the spread was. And certainly that would be an operation, something they could do. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the only thing I would say. I think it's better to do it the way the bill was originally drafted, but those are the arguments for and against it.
We're on Division 1 of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 27. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and recall, in the interest of compromising, I can probably live with Division Number 1. But understand, folks, that normally with a 10-acre exemption, once you get it, and it is an exemption, the permitting where you don't have to get a land quality permit is relatively easy. Air quality, that's abatement of dust. In the crusher, that's not even particularly hard to do. Water quality, if there's no water discharge, you don't even go to water quality. But understand what actually happens in these things. If they're productive, and particularly if they're commercial, this isn't some old rancher out like me. I may have a 10-acre exemption, but it's for my own consumption. That isn't what we're talking about. We're talking about commercial companies. For example, the closest one to me is owned by a company in South Carolina. These are not your native good old boys. These are commercial operators. That company happens to hold, I think it's 5 last count, in our area to fulfill their contracts. But what happens is they either come in and get a number of these permits scattered around in the same general area, or they'll get one or two, whatever appears productive, then convert it to a small mining permit. That's the way it works, particularly these larger out-of-state companies. And I guess I'm not allowed to give you the company's name, or you could go check on them, but if you come to me later, I'd be happy to give it to you. If you're a mining company, this is wide open, and they're happy to convert them to a small mine permit with all of the protections that entails. But if you're the people that live around them, these things are these can really destroy your quality of life, particularly if you live in a county that doesn't have zoning. where there's absolutely no enforcement, there's no nothing. These things are a little rough. We've made them work over the years, but to come in and expand them again, I think is a mistake. So I'm speaking in favor of Division 1 in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Further discussion on Division 1. Mr. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I would oppose Division 1. It looked like we're defeating the purpose of trying to get the bill. But apparently there's quite a difference in the small mining permits. In my area, there's been a lot of them. And they're mostly little construction, local construction companies that are building roads to locations. I've had one myself, and they are bonded. You pay taxes on the product that they haul out. You have to have an agreement with whoever's doing the work, or you can do it yourself. There's quite a conflict in some of the landowners because they have kept these permits open so they could use the product on themselves, and then they get taxed when they haul that gravel into their own roads. So, you know, if you're doing very much, you have to now have the requirements of setting your topsoil aside and keeping it. And it just 10 acres isn't really that large when you get down to the, if you're getting down there to run equipment on it and do any work. So I don't think the size is a big issue. I think when you have to have the bonding and the all the permits and the requirement, well, I think this is reasonable to go to 15 acres.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to agree with Senator from Campbell County. The operators need a little room to do that, and the 15 acres is a lot better size than the 10. I'd like to see us not strike that language.
Any further discussion on Division 1, the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number?
Let's keep two things in mind here. One is by excluding the roads, you're already expanding the area in which they can do their mining. A lot of these gravel pits have been around for years and years. And as a matter of fact, it's my understanding that the 10-acre exemption was originally put in for with the idea of ranchers in mind, in that commercial operations actually kind of discovered them and have been using them ever since under this statute. So I don't know why suddenly 15 acres is necessary when 10 acres has been good for decades. And you know, I'm sure 15 acres sounds better. 10, 30 probably sounds better than 15. So, you know, the problem I have with changing it from 10 to 15, even though we're already going to allow them to expand by not counting the road going in and out, is that you're going to be extending the life of a number of these gravel pits, which is fine and dandy for the owners of the gravel pits, especially the commercial ones, but for those people who live near them, have had to sit there and suffer and grin and bear it until the gravel pit played out. This extends their suffering by at least 50% under the rules that they thought were 10 acres. We'll wait for them to get that gravel out of there and you know, and let them finish up. We've just extended what they have to go through by 50%. And I think that's something we should keep in mind on this first division.
Further discussion on Division 1. Ready for the vote? All those in favor of Division 1 of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 27 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Division 1 of Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 27 has failed. Back, we're on Division Number 2. And we speak to Division Number 2. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on Division Number 2, just for the body's information, this is a change to the way we currently do the 10-acre exemption because there's no notification of the 30 days. I can tell you that there's pros and cons of this. Obviously, there's been some situations where a mine was put in place. Owners felt like they weren't, the landowners around felt like they weren't afforded the opportunity, and to say the least, all you know what broke loose, and it became a real ugly deal. I think this is just a policy decision for the body. If you think they ought to be notified with 30 days before it happens, maybe that's better than after the fact. So I'll leave it up to the body to decide. It just is a change from existing law that we don't do that now. I just want everybody to understand that.
Further discussion on Division 2. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, on and for Division 2. Keep in mind that we're taking what was originally a 10-acre exemption, originally intended for ranchers. We have just expanded these operations by 50% plus when you throw in the roads. You're probably going to be increasing the traffic, probably increasing the size of the equipment being used on these. I live on a hillside, and there's a gravel pit about 4 miles as the crow flies from me. It's also on a hillside. I can see the light at night. During the day when it's quiet and the wind's coming just right, I can hear that operation. And what's it like when he doesn't even know this is coming? All we're doing is they live within a mile of one of these operations that's going to be coming in, that we notify them ahead of time it's coming.
Further discussion on Division 2. Seeing none, all those in favor of Division 2, which is lines 4 through 15 of committee or standing committee amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 of Senate File 27, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
Division number 2 has passed Committee of the Whole. Back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. Article 3, Section 46. Interested members shall not vote. Member has a personal or private interest in any measure or bill proposed or pending shall disclose the fact of the House which he is a member and shall not vote thereon. Mr. Chairman, I've got a little bit of a dilemma, and let me just explain it to the House. There's, on my property, there's a commercial gravel pit owned by a local construction company. We get a royalty from them. It's a nice deal. It's the equivalent many years of having another half a dozen to a dozen calves to sell. Worthwhile. They're not affected directly by this bill, Mr. Chairman. What this bill will do, though, is enable there to be more commercial competition for this gravel pit. The pit in our place has gone through the procedures and is licensed for a much larger area. This one will permit smaller permits, probably into the river gravel in our area, make it easier to do that. And my guy will lose business. Mr. Chairman, if I declare a conflict of interest, that's one less vote toward the majority of members required to pass the bill. Same effect as a no vote. Just I simply vote no. The effect is exactly the same. And my thought is that probably what I ought to do is listen to the debate and vote on the bill rather than declare a conflict. But I have a financial interest in that. And, Mr. Chairman, I raise it because I think it exposes a defect in our constitutional conflict of interest system, where a member who has a conflict that would like to see a bill defeated has the same effect by either voting no or declaring the conflict. So for now, I think I will not declare a conflict and will vote on the bill, but we have a problem with our system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I appreciate what my colleague from Natrona County said, and I guess I should disclose to the body that I have on some of my property a 10-acre exemption. But I don't think it is a conflict. But I, now that I think about what my colleague is saying, maybe that one exists, but I'm still going to vote for it. And the other thing that I would say is I also have on my property a small mining permit that went through extensive process and the notification, everything was conducted, and there's another bill coming like that later, and I think that there we are in a class of persons, and so I'm not going to declare a conflict.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I guess before we leave the bill, I would like to have the sponsor, at least maybe not today or tomorrow, talk about whether or not, or the issue with regard to, you know, some of the materials are not sand and gravel. They're used for sand and gravel. When you look at ballast is generally granite, hard rock material, and you can find them in seams of 50 to 75 feet, and you can move a lot on 15 acres on a small mine exemption, pretty big hole. And if you put in a 15-mile road and put in a hole, and you take even 10 acres and you mine ballast that's a 50-foot seam, or folks that live on limestone, when you begin to look at the potential reclamation obligation if the operator walks away, sufficient for the state to go back in, restore the road, and fill in a 70-foot hole. Now, I'm assuming, by the way, that the material is at the surface, so there's no overburden to move. So it has to be a surface material, no overburden.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, I think that issue was taken care of with the previous amendment that was voted in to allow the department to, through the Land Quality Division, to further bond if they feel the need is necessary. And that would be my answer. If you have a situation where the $2,000 doesn't cover something that might be going on, with this bill is now, the shape it's in now with the proposed amendment passing, they can ask for $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000 per acre, whatever they think they need to not only take care of the road, but also to take care of the mining area itself. And I will double check on that because that's important. I wouldn't want to pass a bill that didn't do that.
Any further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hines's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 27, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 27 has passed Committee of the Whole. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, your Senate Appropriations Committee will please go down to the JAC. We're going to continue budget hearings. And as far as you going, whatever you want to do, Mr. Chairman.
We're done. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Support.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Mr. President.
How does this to go back up? How does this work? Took those seats. Did you turn? Yeah. It's right there. Okay. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 7, do pass amended. Senate File 18, do pass amended. Senate File 51, do pass. Senate File 67, do pass amended. Senate File 74, do pass amended. Senate File 78, do pass. Senate File 2, do pass amended. And Senate File 27, do pass amended. Senator Hastert, Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Committee of the Whole report, adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. That's it, right? Oh, wait. Messages from the House.
January the 16th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 123, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 101, Workers' Compensation Appeals, ayes 23, noes 34, excused 3. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Send Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
January the 16th, 2013. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 55, Energy and Natural Resource Education Initiative. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 39, Uniform Adult Guardianship Jurisdiction Act. Reports back with a reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, do pass amended. Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. January the 16th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 83, Medicaid Fraud Recovery. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, January 17th.
Announcements? Senator Hines.
Mr. President, announcement for your appropriation chairman. The appropriation committee will meet tomorrow, Thursday, January 17th, 15 minutes after the Senate noon recess in room S13 to take up these are, I believe, re-referrals. Senate File 106, project funded by Abandoned Mine Land Fund. Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. And Senate File 60, Medicaid Reform.
Senator Ron Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet at 20 minutes to the hour, about 15 minutes from now, in S14 to consider Senate File 102, I-80 tolling, Senate File 16, aeronautics program, Senate File 57, highway speed limit increase, and Senate File 87, proof of motor vehicle insurance. Thank you.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment. And we'll take up Senate File 75, Honor Farm Horse Program, Senate File 89, Veterinary Tax, Senate File 90, Administration Control of Acquired Institutional Lands.
Senator Esquivel, are you? Okay. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number three, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, 30 minutes after the noon recess, to pick up Senate File 109, Highway and Road Funding Severance Taxes.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I made an announcement at lunch about the meeting of Travel, Recreation, Wildlife in the Kitchen Sink for tomorrow morning, but we've got additional bills, so I thought I'd amend if that's all right with you. We'll be studying at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning in S-14. We'll be continuing study on Senate File 54, Limited Alcohol Beverage Permit, Senate File 53, Partition Action Subject to Subdivision Laws, and Senate File 58, Driver's License Suspension for Child Support Nonpayment.
Further announcements. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, not to take away the thunder of the tomorrow, the announcement for the Joint Minerals Committee on Friday morning at 8. There will be a Joint Minerals Committee and a presentation made by the Engineering Task Force. You recall last year we put together the bill, an amendment started in the Senate here to develop the university and the governor and the Minerals Committee to develop a plan for a Tier 1 engineering college. The governor went out and recruited and appointed a pretty magnificent group of former Wyoming grads that are frankly running some pretty cool companies, and they agreed to spend the year to work on this engineering study. It's out tomorrow. We'll get you the task force findings. And, you know, I think if you listen to it, you're going to learn not only maybe a model for taking the College of Engineering to the top 100 or better, top 10 in certain areas, but maybe looking at other parts of the university, community colleges. Those folks are going to be here Friday morning at 8 to provide a joint presentation to the presentation to the Joint Minerals Committee up in room 302, and like I said, tomorrow we'll get you their report. But they did some pretty extraordinary work, and when they get here, I'd sure encourage you to thank them for all their work. Thank you.
Senator Bob Flatern? Any further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion has been adopted. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, January 17th.